This is SB Nation Radio, and you're listening to Nate and the Noise.
32 after, thanks for being here on a Tuesday edition of the program. Nate and Sean, SB Nation Radio. Coming up top of the hour, Mighty Gwynn will take over for us. Rolling out of the weekend of March Madness, going from 64 down to 16 and getting ready for the Sweet 16 to start up on Thursday evening. We have a chance to look across not just the individual teams, but sometimes the way the conferences have played out within the tournament itself, because there's times when a particular conference kind of stands out. Maybe going into the tournament, you think it's weak. You say, gosh, I can't believe that particular conference got this many teams in, whatever the case may be. And one of those that we certainly have been talking about since the weekend is the Big Ten. So from btpowerhouse.com, as in Big Ten, the managing editor of that site is Thomas Bendit. Thomas joins us on the hotline. Thomas, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Doing well.
Appreciate you making some time. Obviously, you have to be pleased. I know you're in Ann Arbor, so obviously you're very pleased with where Michigan sits. But overall, the performance of the conference, are you surprised by what they were able to do in the first weekend?
You know, I would say a little bit surprised, specifically with Wisconsin. I mean, I knew they were capable of doing it, but to knock off Villanova, that's a huge win. I mean, when you're talking about the number one overall seed in the entire tournament. But otherwise, I mean, Michigan was red hot. Purdue, really so far, at least if you buy into the seeding numbers, has really just done what they're supposed to do. So I'm not as surprised by those, but, you know, Northwestern certainly showed up well last weekend. And really, you know, it's hard to be too down on the Big Ten's performance so far, especially considering the mixed expectations coming into the weekend.
Let's take a look at Purdue, as you said, as the way the seeds broke out. They're exactly where they were expected to be now, facing off against Kansas, who's looked like the best team in the tournament thus far. But they haven't faced a team with the size of Purdue, Caleb Swanigan in particular. He needs to get a little more help from the backcourt, though, if they're going to have a chance against the Jayhawks, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd agree. I mean, Purdue's backcourt kind of hit and miss here and there. But, you know, Swanigan and Isaac Haas up front, and really Vince Edwards, who showed up really well, certainly in that game against Vermont, they're going to be key factors, and they're going to be a huge challenge for Kansas. But, yeah, I mean, if Purdue is hoping to pull off that upset, I think they need to get something from the backcourt, specifically in transition. You know, with Josh Jackson and Mason, Kansas can really push the ball on the run. And if Purdue can hold their own there, you know, maybe they can beat up Kansas inside, get them into foul trouble. But I would think that would be their path to winning.
When you look at the you were just talking about Purdue, let's talk from a defensive standpoint and what they face with that guard play. You look across with Graham, you look at Josh Jackson, you look at Frank Mason being a senior leader across that team. If you can body up down low, but what about the perimeter defense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a challenge. I think, you know, what Purdue decides to do with Jackson is going to be really interesting, because Dakota Mathias for Purdue, great defender. I think he'll hold his own against the backcourt pretty well. But, you know, who is Purdue going to put on Jackson? Because I feel like he's the real unique piece that Purdue doesn't have necessarily a great matchup against. I would think it would be Vincent Edwards, who's sort of a 3-4 style forward, but he's going to have his hands full, and I certainly would expect Purdue to try to rotate a couple guys on Jackson to maybe get him uncomfortable or at least as much as they can.
Let's move over to Michigan, which continues to have a really inspiring run. I mean, the story is one thing, but the way the team has been playing is entirely another. After toppling Louisville, now they get Oregon, and an Oregon team that really struggled in a lot of ways to get by Creighton, that looks like maybe they're running on fumes to a certain extent. How do you expect to see this play out for the Wolverines?
Yeah, I think, you know, if you got a chance to watch Michigan's opening game on Friday when they played Oklahoma State, it was just a massive, massive shootout of epic proportions. Both teams were red hot, scoring about every possession. That's kind of what I expect out of this game. I don't think it'll be kind of as reckless and loose, so to speak. But I think it's going to be two great offenses. You know, Michigan's offense is probably hotter than anybody left in the tournament at this point. And Oregon, obviously with Brooks and that firepower from the backcourt and the even the wing to extent, I think they'll be able to score on what has been an inconsistent Michigan defense. And really, I think it's going to come down to who can get a couple extra defensive rebounds and who can get a couple stops in the last 5 minutes.
Let's talk about a couple of teams that are not still remaining in the Sweet 16, Thomas. I want to start with Northwestern. We know this was their first time in the tournament ever. Obviously, winning a first-round game was a big deal. Is their success, as you look at it, is it a one-and-done? Is this a team that is now going to at least be within the bubble and be an opportunity team going forward, or was this just sort of a perfect storm for them and they're going to quietly disappear in the basketball arena again?
Well, I mean, certainly as long as Chris Collins stays with the program, I don't think they're going to disappear anytime soon. A lot of their key guys are going to be back next year. So I think they will certainly make some noise in the Big Ten. And one thing a lot of people forget is Northwestern had a lot of guys in and out of the lineup this year, like Scotty Lindsey particularly, that they might have been a little bit better, and maybe they would have even moved up a seat or two had they been healthier. So I think next year they're going to be dangerous again. I will say I don't know if they have that, you know, top-end potential like some of the other teams, but I certainly think they'll be in the NCAA tournament conversation next year.
And then, Thomas, one of your most recent posts that you had at btpowerhouse.com was about Tom Crean and about the position now at Indiana. Where do they go from here?
Yeah, it's an interesting spot. I thought they really could have went either way on whether they wanted to retain or fire Crean, but obviously they move on. Steve Alford from UCLA is going to get most of the attention.
Right.
I actually think they should probably go in a different route. I think there are some of the under-the-radar guys that they could get interest from. You know, Illinois just pulled off a surprise hire with Brad Underwood from Oklahoma State. I think Indiana should go that kind of route. Oddly enough, I actually threw out the name, and it was really speculation, but I actually think Chris Collins from Northwestern would be a good fit that no one's talking about, which I understand it's very rare for a coach to move within the same conference, but I think he could be a name to sit on. There are a few coaches in the state to sit on, but yeah, I think they'll make a great hire. But I would say the odds-on pick right now is probably Steve Alford from UCLA.
Great stuff. BTPowerhouse.com is the site, part of SB Nation, talking Big Ten basketball. Thomas Bendit has been our guest. Thomas, appreciate the time this morning. Enjoy the games this weekend.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.